Scene 6. In the Heart of Darkness.
I still sat in the unreal twilight of the temple palace, opposite the god who had cried in my presence. "Why don't you kill me outright?" I suddenly heard my voice, surprising myself. It felt as if homeworld made me lose my inhibitions. Thank goodness I had phrased my thoughts as an open question rather than a challenge. Accordingly, the shadow of an ephemeral smile moved across the victor's lips. "The thought has crossed my mind indeed," he replied. "Of course it would be feasible, but what would it be good for?"
"Gallifrey would send another ship," I continued his train of thought.
"Exactly. And another, until they would finally send a whole fleet or use the services of the Jadoon. The Time Lords must be hell-bent to stop my dealings here, so I only have a small number of options to keep up my little play."
One didn't have to be the champion of the Gallifreyan Academy to understand the choices. Either the Vector won me over to be his companion, or he would make an example of me so gruesome and terrifying that it would deter the Time Lords from sending another expedition, writing off the Eloi as a lost case. Neither option appealed much to me. "The truth," I resumed the earlier topic. "What is it?" He smiled, this time more genuine, although it would have been too much to say there was warmth to it.
"I hope you don't expect anything like the meaning of life or such paltry morsels of wisdom," he explained and fondled the little device around his neck again.
"I've seen the people in the village which you exposed to the truth, and I've met the ship you devastated and the outpost. Everyone seems to be killing either themselves or the others once they realize the truth." He nodded very slowly.
"Indeed. Already on Gallifrey, where they hospitalized me, Time Lords are not given to ready aggression, so they opted for suicide rather than murder."
"Yes, that was what Kellner had warned me about."
"You see, the experiments had made me hear other people's thoughts. That was when the truth hit me."
Instinctively, I held my breath in anticipation.
"As I told you, at first I was completely helpless, until the medics managed to implant a little device in my brain which allowed me control of this ability. And I hadn't forgotten my experiences, so I fixed this here together."
He held up the little box for me.
"Really, just a bit of tinkering, but it allows me to project onto others the power to read each other's thoughts as well."
Quite obviously, he expected me to pick up the clue, but I couldn't. What was so bad about reading your fellow's thoughts? The Vector bent forward a little.
"Of course, as opposed to me, they have no way of turning down the voices once it starts. They hear the others constantly. You don't think that's bad?
No, you don't think.
But the truth is, this way I force them to be honest to each other. Always. All the time. They can mince their words, but they can't hold their thoughts. And they're exposed to the thoughts of the others. That is the elixir of truth I make them taste. You still don't think that's bad? Just imagine, how often have you yourself, with all good intentions, held back your thoughts? Not responded with ire to a perceived insult, not shown impatience or indifference? How often have you feigned sympathy for the pathetic, hopeless cases,
Do you honestly tell your superiors what you think? Your subordinates? Your peers? And how many of your compliments are really from the bottom of your heart? Our hearts brimming with white lies, shrouded by conscience. The truth. That is how we really see our fellows, how we constantly judge each other, whether they are uglier than we or prettier, more stupid or more clever, how we are jealous, haughty, scared or appalled by them, and we are wise to never be honest with them, but dissolve the bitter pills of our sentiments in a leaden goblet of sweet words. Not anymore. I am the vector that transmits the disease of truth. I gazed transfixedly at the little box around the vector's neck. He was right, of course, unless a saint was talking to another saint, we are all constantly passing judgment about those around us. But we're wont to keep this to ourselves, or release it only nicely wrapped and in small doses. The vector, instead, tore down all veils and walls and flooded and flushed everyone with the truth. Every thought was then a pinprick or a cutting glass, every word a bucket of ice water, slaps of the hands, blows of the hammer. Every move you made triggered a turn of the screw, not one sincere smile in the world anymore. There were really only two options in this incessant torrent of bleak, naked, untempered truth, once you were in there. I had seen both on my way here. And you know what is best to it? The vector woke me from my reverie. He was grinning broadly for the first time. I have become the ruler of a planet without the use of violence, without force, even without any intrigue. Not a single gunshot. All I did was ripping the masks off their faces, and that made me their god. Curious and curiosa, I shouldn't be hunted down. I should get an award for that. He started to laugh like a maniac, a non-ending laugh, a howling of insane exhilaration, the laughter of one tickled to madness. Before I knew what I was doing, I had triggered the fractal bomb and thrown it at the vector. I raced back to my TARDIS. The vector was gone, trapped in the Schrödinger folds between dimensions on the fractal fringes of the universe, where straight lines weren't straight lines anymore, but clouds at right angles with themselves. There was no way for him to return from there. Throwing the bomb at him had not been an act of deliberation. Some instinct must have decided that if I started to ponder the use of the bomb, then the vector might intercept me, and thus I had triggered the weapon without thought. But why did my heart still beat up to my neck, with the vector gone for good, while I tried to reach the apparent safety of my vessel? Maybe the vector was right. And maybe I was afraid to accept that his reign of terror, established upon the Eloi and easy to establish upon any other society, was really nothing but their reign over themselves. A far more carnal fear rose from the 2 or 3 seconds which elapsed between throwing the bomb and effecting the disappearance of the vector. I clearly had caught him unaware. But he still had been able to direct his little black box towards me. And even after he was gone, in a flash and a puff and some ethereal smoke, paradimensional dust in the afterglow of an otherwise lightless universe, I felt the effects of his box kick in with me. I began to hear voices, a silent murmur at first, the rustling of non-existent leaves on infinitely faraway trees. But it grew louder with every beat of my heart's. He had pointed his weapon at me, and he had struck me. I was beginning to be able to hear the thoughts of the Eloi. I was the last victim infected by the vector. Still, it was faint, almost inaudible. But the whispering, the murmur, would grow stronger and stronger, and soon an incessant stream of thoughts pouring from every direction would overwhelm me and turn me into either a suicidal maniac, a mass murderer, or the monster the vector had become. My TARDIS gave me only a brief respite, I knew that. With the seconds ticking, the minutes being the bricks that would make up the wall immuring my future, I realized that only one option was open to me. I had to regenerate. Regenerate quickly. Decide upon a new body, a new mind. No matter which, as long as I could cleanse myself from the dreadful Maya's touch the vector had bestowed upon me.
Purge my soul from the truth. It was done. I was a new person. The murmur was gone, the rustling. I was deaf to it again. Yet I had paid a price for it. The vector's disease had scarred me forever, no matter how many times I would shed my skin. I had received a glimpse into the human condition, and the human condition had imprinted itself on me. No regeneration could flush that from my mind. I was a different person. A person which would turn his back on the society of Time Lords, Gallifrey, all the laughable, pompous buffoons thinking they could run affairs by watching them. I would be different. I would be someone who took affairs in his own hands with my knowledge about the nature of creatures all over the universe. And of course, I would adopt a new name, like all who shook Gallifrey's dust from their shoes. I think that name should be the Master. This was Heart of Darkness, a Little More Sonic audio story. Written and directed by Elmar Vogt, based on the novel by Joseph Conrad. Narration and post-production by Doris Rubruck. Audio engineering, Brian Hillesheim. Production assistants, Barbara Hasselmann and Sina Vogt. Special thanks to the Uferpalast Kino in Fürth. Visit us on the web, littlemoresonic.com.